From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made this past Friday when dozens of Rochester teachers received notice that they would either lose their jobs or be displaced to new locations within the district. The Rochester City School District is facing a long-term fiscal emergency. New Superintendent Terry Dade says closing the gaps for future budgets will have to include cutting some teaching positions. And Dade says it cannot wait. If the district doesn't make cuts starting in January, it will move into the next school year, millions of dollars in the red. On this program just a couple of weeks ago, School Board President Van White said that any cuts must be made as far away from student impact as possible. This week, hundreds of students and parents have protested the proposed cuts, saying that students would be impacted severely in some cases. This hour, a conversation about what has been proposed and what comes next for Rochester teachers and students. We'll also discuss whether there's a role for other level of governments to play, in particular state government. Our guests this hour include the longest tenured member of the Rochester City School Board, Commissioner Willa Powell. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Evan.
Also with us is Chris Widmeyer, who is a former Rochester teacher for 13 years in the district. Chris, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Evan.
And from Citizen Action of New York, community organizer Stevie Vargas is here. Welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And Mercedes Phelan is here as well. Welcome to you.
Thank you, Evan.
Well, this is a case where we could have had hundreds of guests. People want to talk about this. Parents, students, WXXI has been covering the protests that you've been seeing this week. We know there have been emergency meetings, PTA meetings at schools across the district. So, Commissioner Powell, let me start by asking you about process. Here we are with a proposed, and I'm looking at, I think, 218 Rochester Public School teachers, administrators, and paraprofessionals combined, expected to be laid off as a plan to bridge this $65 million gap. And my first question is just on how we got there and whether you're satisfied with the process. Take us through how the process is going.
Well, thank you very much. And let me start by saying that nobody wants to be in this position. Board members would just as soon hide under a rock than to be appearing in public right now under these circumstances. I know the superintendent did not expect to be the budget superintendent and has said that as much. He wanted to be focused on improving education. The reason that we have so many cuts that have to be made is that not only did two years ago our budget, our spending actually exceed our budget, but this year the same budget assumptions were applied in terms of not spending much, not allocating as much on substitute teachers and healthcare costs as a reasonable person should have expected. So Superintendent Dade laid before the Board of Education a plan that would reduce expenses, the largest portion of it being capital expenses, the cash capital line, reducing the workforce by 5%, and not or, but and going to Albany and demanding an increase in funding, either a spin-up, which is just a loan against future revenues, or an actual advance on the funding formula, which the state has refused to deliver on since it...
About 2008.
Right.
Yeah.
So so that's the plan that... Superintendent Dade laid out for us wasn't just close the gap by firing teachers. That's not what happened. It included reducing our costs as much as could be accomplished and going to the state for more funding. And I'm glad to see the protests. I hope that our representatives in Albany see and hear those protests because they're not taking our word for it. And we need all the agitation we can. Certainly agitating locally is far more cost effective than putting people on a bus and storming the legislative office buildings in Albany. Now, the next question is, if the superintendent put out a plan to cut 5% across the board, does that mean actually 5% of every class category, paras, teachers' assistants, teachers, administrators, and so on. The answer is no. Firstly, the ASAR union, the administrators union, polled their members and offered a solution that they could present, which was that the administrative class of employee was willing to give up their vacation cash-in. And that was a substantial contribution to gap closing. It meant that we didn't have to lay off 5% of the teachers or ASAR members. We were able to reduce the number, those numbers. But even in the reduction, the question is, what do you have to avoid? Certainly, we're not going to lay off teachers who are special ed or paras or teacher's assistants that are in support of special ed. If a student's IEP says a one-on-one teacher's aide, then that's what they're going to get. We're not going to violate the law anymore when it comes to the special ed. We've been down that road where there's not enough money to go around, and so we're going to do what we have to do, even if it's not legal. Okay, that's off the table. Some schools are going to feel this far worse than others. For instance, School 19 or other schools that have been under restructure, School 42, that have been under restructure, they have the youngest employees. And one thing we have to do is last in, first out, because that's the law. We have no
no flexibility.
Flexibility.
How many total teachers, by the way?
I can't answer that.
Okay.
We have no flexibility because except that English language teachers who are certified to teach in English language learning and in special ed will probably be the last to go because we have to meet our state mandated needs first, and so it'll be in the general ed category that we lose the most teachers.
But some schools are going to be hurting for this?
Some schools are not going to be hurting because they're going to lose teachers in total. They're going to be hurting because their youngest teachers are going to be leaving and they'll have to backfill with other teachers who have bumping rights.
So the other teachers would be displaced to those positions?
Correct.
Okay, because, look, what I think I want to understand is when you have to cut, when the district decides we're going to cut teachers, administrators, paras, whatever the case may be, and whatever that number is, you're using the formula, last in, first out, et cetera. But then do you have discretion to look at and say, look, school 12 is getting hammered here, or whatever the case may be. Do you have the discretion to say, yeah, the formula says this, but it doesn't work here. We're not doing it here. We're going to do it here. We're not going to do it here. Do you have that discretion?
Yes and no, and I'm so glad you asked that question. One of the superintendent's recommendations was to eliminate teachers on assignment. As it turns out, the teachers on assignment are the largely the teachers who are supporting our restorative practices implementation. This is a category where, and keep in mind, the board has not voted on any of these cuts. The reason that people have gotten the pink slips now is because the amount of time, the lead time that we're required by law to give people before actually laying them off dictates that they be notified before the decision has actually been made. But back to the restorative practices, the teachers who are on assignment. This board feels very strongly that restorative practices is a long-term win for us. In fact, many board members, myself included, believe that if we can get restorative practices working in all of our high schools, we don't need the school resource officers, which cost us $1.4 million that we have to reimburse the city for. If we could eliminate I would rather eliminate a police officer in our schools mm-hmm. than a teacher in our schools.
I know that's right.
And so that's one aspect of the superintendent's recommendation that I think the school board may push back on. I haven't counted the vote, so I don't know. But in terms of one school suffering more than another? Here's the problem. Those schools with the youngest teaching population, the whole last in, first out system that we don't control means that those schools will be the ones to suffer, and there is no way, because of the whole bumping rights thing, that we can avoid that. Okay. And that hurts.
Generally speaking, are you satisfied with the plan put forward?
In its broadest brushstrokes, it's the most fair thing that the superintendent could propose. It's like when you have a home budget and a bomb gets dropped on you. You get an income tax bill, and you have no choice but to pay that bill. In your home situation, you're not going to just eliminate one bill. Maybe you say, all right, I don't need cable anymore, okay? But you still have to have a car, and you still have to have car insurance. You still have to have groceries. Well, maybe you decide that the grocery budget's not going to include steak every once a week anymore. From now on, it's going to have mac and cheese twice a week.
I'm not sure how much steak was left in the budget, but go ahead.
In our budget, I agree, but I'm just giving an analogy here. In your home situation, you wouldn't just cut in one place to balance your home budget. You try to spread out the pain, and that's the proposal that was put in front of us.
Let me ask our other guests to kind of weigh in now, and I'm going to start with Stevie Vargas, and I'm going to ask all three to kind of weigh in, not only with what they're seeing, but what they think could happen next year. Go ahead, Stevie.
I'm seeing a lot of pain and frustration, but I'm also seeing a lot of organizing from parents, teachers, students. It's an all hands on deck situation right now. That being said, even though everyone is fighting, I do think the school board will vote for the cuts. Looking at the situation, I think it's inevitable. It's going to happen. I still think we all need to be very, very vocal because we need to look at all of the reasons why we're in this current situation. You're seeing a lot of divisiveness and infighting and blame going around, but there's a lot of factors that play into our current situation, and that's the fact that the state has not given our CSD, or the Rochester City School District, what we are owed. They currently owe us $86 million.
We wouldn't be feeling any pain if we had that much money.
By the way, for listeners who are wondering what she's talking about, that goes back to 2007, 2008. There is a formula. When the fiscal crisis hit, I think David Patterson was the governor. They basically said, look, for now, we've got to cut what we're giving you, even though it's not what we owe you. We'll restore it when we can. It's never been restored. Mm-hmm. Here we are. And state government sort of moved on. If they're not ordered by a court to do this, that money is never going to be there. But that's sort of, I think, the broad 30,000.
Well, and I think
view.
The other point to that, too, is that it was supposed to be a 3 to 4 year phase in. And so
between 2007 and 2011.
Exactly. And yeah. We're past that at this point. So we should have it.
But when Commissioner Powell says, this is painful, no one wants this, but given the situation, it's the most fair thing, generally speaking, we could do. Do you have a problem with that?
Yeah, it's not fair. I don't think no budget should be balanced on the backs of the students. And that's what's happening. The students and the teachers are paying for the mistakes of the state and those in charge. And you're putting a Band-Aid on a situation that's going to have long-term effects.
Can I, Stevie, let me just read what Superintendent Dade said about exactly that to City Newspaper. Mm-hmm. Superintendent Dade said, this is not an example of balancing our budget on the backs of teachers and staff. There are some messages out there that teachers aren't going to be in front of kids and the like. There might be differences, like some teachers being displaced, but our students will continue to have high-quality instructors in front of them every day.
Agree to disagree. No, we've seen in the community, we've seen some exceptional teachers, some teachers who've made such a large impact on our community laid off. And it's mostly like
displaced or laid off?
Both.
Okay.
But mostly laid off. And that's not something that we can stand for. And I don't know, no disrespect to Terry Dade, he's new and he inherited this problem and he's tasked with trying to fix it. But this is very much balancing a budget on the backs of the students. The students are the ones paying for this and the students feel it, hence why they marched yesterday in droves, close to 9,000 students. Like, listen to your students. You got to find another way. That being said, I still think they're going to move forward with the cuts, but you can't say it's because no one spoke out against it.
So when it comes to another way, if the district is saying the money isn't there, if Commissioner Powell is saying, I feel you, no one wants this, the money isn't there, do you want and do you expect Albany or other local government, somebody to step in?
100%. 100%. And that's why we're working really hard. Willa, I know you disagree, but we do plan on filling buses to go to Albany.
Good for you. Good for you.
We're going to be loud, and we're going to do it both locally and in Albany, because that's what we have to do. If no one is advocating for this and no one is loud and vocal and in your face about it, like, you owe us money, you better give it to us, they're going to continue to brush it under the rug.
But I can't speak for lawmakers who aren't here, but people like Assemblyman David Gant, who have certainly a long history and a lot of sway there, have indicated, what do you expect us to do? You know, clean up your own mess is sort of, he didn't put it that way. That's sort of
I expect him to do his job.
Okay, but that's the vibe, yeah, that sort of comes. Is that fair? That's the vibe that I've been hearing and feeling from some lawmakers, certainly not others, but I'm not sure what you're going to encounter in Albany. What do you expect to encounter in Albany?
So I think it depends. You know, like last year we did get a little bit of some funding. We got, I believe it was $13 million. Is that right, Willa? It was around.
We got barely more than inflation.
Yeah, about year. 13. And so it's not as if they don't know that it exists or that they don't know that we need it. And so I'm pretty sure that they're expecting us to come. But as I said earlier, you know, the phase in was already supposed to happen. And so at this point, like, it's not an ask, it's a demand. Like, $86 million is owed to this district and give it to me.
And then there have been some electeds who have been supportive. Bronson has
absolutely
been very, yeah, very supportive. And those who haven't been supportive, then we look to see who else is willing to run and support the causes that impact our community. So all these things are tied together. You can't look at these things in a vacuum. You have to look at all the factors. And when you have an elected who's not in the interest of the community, you look for others who are.
So before I know Will wants to jump back in, I want to get a former RCSD teacher position from Chris in just a moment. But on that subject of getting people sort of who will get in your corner on this, in the last 24 hours, we've seen that Alex Udelson is going to challenge Harry Bronson in a Democratic primary. Alex Udelson is the chief of staff for Mayor Lovely Warren. Mayor Lovely Warren, of course, had a sort of a public heated dispute with Assemblymember Bronson regarding Assemblymember Bronson's views of what New York State should be doing in regards to a school board, the district itself. The mayor pushed earlier in the year for a referendum that would allow for a state takeover. That got defeated in court. She has been very critical of the way the district has handled money. Assemblymember Bronson has put forward sort of his own ideas for reform that don't include a state takeover. But now you've got Alex Udelson challenging him. And Alex Udelson, one of the first comments he makes is he thinks it is, again, I'm trying to paraphrase, just devastating what has happened to students. He's not satisfied at any level, in particular what New York State has done. I suspect he doesn't run if the mayor isn't supportive of this run. He's her chief of staff, mm-hmm, though he's running as his own person. So is that a concern? Did you want to explain the look you just gave me, Stevie Vargas?
No. I'll just say again, these things don't live in a vacuum. Everything is connected.
Is the party split over this?
The Democratic Party?
Yeah.
I mean, I would hope not. Like, in the sense of, so to me, it seems kind of obvious what's happening. You know, you mentioned, mm-hmm, how there was a verbal, you know, back and forth between Assemblymember Bronson and the mayor, and the mayor has been very clear about state takeover, mayoral control over the years, and so it makes sense that she would want to put somebody in that position, in the position of assembly, to push that agenda. And I think that a lot of people, parents, community members, I know myself included, as a actual parent of RCSD, which I don't believe Alex is, so his opinion to me is kind of irrelevant on that subject, but we want what's best for our students, and we'll do whatever that is. And I think a lot of parents don't see mayoral control or state takeover as the answer. That's not to say none do.
Sure, but I think the mayor would say, I agree with you. I'm upset with what's happened to students and parents and children in Rochester, and so are you. We're both upset with this. We have the same kind of goals here.
Do we? I mean, so my thought about on that is, you know, the city hasn't given any more money to the district since 2004, as in the amount that they're supposed to be giving them. And so if you are really about our students and about helping with the situation, why have you not offered any type of financial assistance?
Okay. Why don't we get Chris Widmeyer's views, and then we'll turn back to Commissioner Powell. As a former teacher until just recently, 13 years in the city school district, what's your observation? What comes to mind first as you watch what's happened in the last 5 days in Rochester?
I think one of the challenges is that this is a really complex problem, and there are two levels of it, and people are very confused about how this kind of thing could happen at the local level. And, you know, there's some talk about, could a reasonable person have predicted this to happen? And I think that if that's the case, then how did it happen? And, you know, the people that are responsible for making sure this doesn't happen at a local level, you know, what responsibility are they taking, and how are they saying, this is how this happened, and then how will it never happen again? Because at the local level, it is traumatizing to students, and it's important that they're not removing the restorative teachers from the classrooms, because after this happens, that's going to be particularly important, because you know, looking at it from a perspective of we're just going to cut these staff and we're going to shuffle some students around really minimizes the impact that it's going to have. And that's what the students are standing up and saying. And people need to listen very carefully to what they're saying, because at the root of it is every child deserves, in the state constitution, it says a sound and basic education. That's not even an excellent education. That's just a basic education. And it's been decided that, one, they're not being provided that to begin with, and that's what the Foundation Aid is about. But then even more so, too, they're going to take the students out of, or teachers out of the classroom. They're going to shuffle teachers around mid-year, and that's going to affect people's ability in the short term to get a positive or to get a high-quality education, but then also in the long term, because there are all these new teachers that were recruited, especially teachers of color, that now are going to say, what am I doing this for? I'm not going to come back to the system that is going to not treat me, you know, not treat me with the respect that I'm here and I care very much. And so that's one piece. The other piece is the structural challenges of the way that the school district in Rochester is designed, and that, you know, if there's anybody that doesn't look at it all and say things need to change drastically, that we can't just get over this hump and then go back to the way things have been, that this is really, to me, for teachers that are waking up to what's been going on for a long time. Mm-hmm. You know, I first learned about the Foundation Aid from a student who got me on a bus down to Albany with a group of his classmates as part of his capstone project. And that's when I learned about Foundation Aid, and that was about 5 or 6 years ago. And so there are a lot of teachers and parents that are kind of waking up to these structural challenges that have been going on for a long time. And I think that this is an opportunity for our city to also say, and not just our city, our county, and the state, to say things need to change drastically. And it's not necessarily state takeover. It's getting the people in the room and figuring out how we can work together. And unfortunately, our leaders haven't been up to that task so far.
Who do you blame?
Yeah. I can't blame any particular individuals. You know, I think the responsibility lies with the school board in this right now, because they're the people that stepped up and said, we're going to serve the community and we're going to be the ones who do what we can to lead the school district to success, and that's not happening. So there's responsibility on them. But then, you know, the responsibility lies with the people that set up the system in the first place, that segregated schools and created districts. And, you know, we were talking about, you're talking about like the maintenance of effort in the city, and it hasn't increased. But then I was looking in before I came, the Pittsford voted to increase their budget. No, I lost my numbers. But, you know, they can increase to the contribution that is going to the schools from the taxes, and people don't cry mismanagement of money.
Right.
So that's one piece of it. But then the other part of it is being a teacher in the city school district for 13 years and knowing parents in the school district and children in the school district, that it is the organization itself is dysfunctional. Yeah. And for me, it got to the point where I, you know, you just look at it and you say, what is there? And trying to change it in every area, trying to change it from
But help me yeah. be a little specific here, because I'm hearing two things. Number one, while you want the board to be accountable, that's what they ran for, to lead, you also seem to be indicating you're agreeing that right now Albany has to step up and honor this commitment. If Albany does that, a lot of this, at least on the budget side of things, gets fixed, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
But when you say there's dysfunction at just about every level, give me one specific thing that could change that would start to fix that.
Looks like Mercedes has an answer to that. And so I might defer to Mercedes, because that, you know, one of the things that's really hard is that teachers are in the classroom teaching, and we rely on our elected leaders in the RTA to be the ones that understand the system and where the changes could be. But for me, one of the things that I think could really change is areas where there's more opportunity for teachers and parents, though, parents and students, to have a voice in what's happening, and for the school board to listen to them in ways that are meaningful. I think that's the easiest place we can start, is for, you know, when whatever 40 people get up to talk to the school board, that they have the full attention of the school board. It's students, it's parents, it's teachers, full attention, listening and thinking about what people are saying as important. So that's a first step I would take.
Did you want to add to that?
Yeah. So I want to say overall, like, this process has been, the last 5 days have been just like a lot for me. My daughter's teacher, I talked to her the other day and she was crying about the situation. And so, like, you know, there's a lot of blame going around. And I think, you know, towards the superintendent, towards the board, I do think there needs to be a accountability for the board. But I believe that Chris is right. Like, there needs to be changes in our systems. And so for me, this is an unpopular opinion so far, but I do believe, like, in the suburbs, how they vote on their school district budget, that we should be doing that in the city. I think right now the process, there's no transparency in it. Again, there's not input from the community, unless, of course, you know, you sufficiently organize and make it happen. But, like, if you want that type of engagement, if you want people to be active around this, you know, why are you not making them a part of that process? And I think making the budget something that the people get to vote on is a great way to start that.
All right, so let's get back to the immediate emergency, though. And one more question for the organizers before I turn back to Commissioner Powell. I hear Superintendent Dade saying, no one wants to cut. The superintendent did say on this program that his analysis leads him to, again, I don't want to speak for him, but he went pretty far in saying that the district probably hired too many teachers in recent years, based on the numbers, based on declining total number of student population, based on movement of some students from traditional schools to charter schools, that sort of a correction probably is necessary. But also, his point is not just to sort of cut and hurt, that nobody really wants that, that if there was a different way to do this, he'd be very, very happy to do it. Absent Albany stepping up, if you can't get this, the foundation aid, you can't get this aid that was promised many years ago, do you agree, Stevie, that someone has to lose a job, that there will have to be cuts, including people who get paid by the district to teach and to administer and to work, that this cannot happen without making personnel cuts? Do you disagree with that?
Not in the classroom, yeah. No, I disagree. The cuts should not be made in the classroom.
Should be no teaching cuts, mm-mm, even without additional aid from Albany.
Exactly. And I was like, when you look at how much we're paying, like...
Superintendent says you can't do it. It's just not a reality. Not doable.
I disagree. Look again. Keep looking.
Keep looking. Okay.
Keep looking.
So one of the things that drives me crazy is charter schools. Like, mm-hmm. I think we've had conversations about that before, Evan. But the thing is, you know, with each student, a good chunk of money goes over with them to the charter school. And it does not come back
yes.
with them
mm-hmm.
If they come back to the district. And so
it stays with the charter school.
Exactly. And so I think what we really need to look at is a moratorium, honestly, on charter schools. I'm not saying let's get rid of all of them, but a moratorium until we figure out, are they actually successful? Which I don't think so, but again, like, let's do studies, whatever, but let's not make any more until, you know, we figure out what's going on here. As far as, do I believe that the teachers should be cut from the classroom? Absolutely not. There's a lot of administrators sitting at central office who mm-hmm. don't do that much work that, in my opinion, are trophy seats, and I think that they could easily be removed. I think that the cuts that are happening are going to affect every single school. Even if it's one teacher, that's still affecting a community. As I said, my daughter's school is up to lose 3 people at this point. We just had our principal transition from our school to another school, and that within itself was, like, really hard for the school community. I remember working with School 41 when they were transitioning, when they first went into our receivership and through that process. And so for now to hear that they're basically going to lose all the new staff that they just got, that's going to be really traumatic. I understand in a business sense, you know, what the superintendent's trying to say. But this isn't a business. Like, these are children. These are people's lives. And this is our my child's education, everybody's child's education. And it's not, no. We need to do something different.
Okay, Commissioner Powell, you've heard a lot. Go ahead.
Okay,
and then we're
going
to turn it over to listeners. Go ahead.
So as one board member, and only speaking as one board member, if I thought that a vote of the board to do nothing except demand that the state come through to put if I thought that would work, I would do it. If I thought I could get 3 other board members to go, you know, go in that solution with me, I would do it. But I don't think it will work, and let me outline why. After the state enacted the formula, the board and other school districts continued to lobby Albany to make sure we got our aid. And I cannot tell you how many legislators, including Joe Morelli, looked me in the eye and said, "We fixed that already. Why are you here? We fixed that already." Even though after 2 years, the aid was frozen and then it was reversed. The gap elimination, and they were talking about the state's revenue gap elimination was implemented. They actually went backward in terms of implementing the contract for excellence. So now, fortunately, now we have some more education-friendly people. Jamie Romeo is a far cry better than Joe Morelli. Harry Bronson is an advocate. On the Senate side, Shelley Mayer, who was a state assemblywoman in Yonkers, is now a state senator, and the chair of the Education Committee, great ally. But at the same time, once the gap elimination was removed from the formula, which affected all the state, suburbs, rural areas, once that was taken out of the formula, you didn't have suburbs squawking for more money anymore. You only had the high needs rural districts saying, but this 2% tax cap is killing us. The legislature is still saying, we fixed the gap. We took the gap out of it. Suburbs are happy. We did our job. We fixed that. And so they're not willing to look back at the formula, even though it's still
That's
in the law.
That's why I said, if this goes to court, you got a shot. But absent
it
does, that.
Not even that. I'll tell you why. The campaign for educational equity which replaced the campaign for fiscal equity, is in front of the courts now. The New York State Attorney General is essentially arguing that what's in the law is not a mandate, it's aspirational. So here we have a Democratic governor, Cuomo, fighting equity as hard as Governor Pataki, a Republican, ever did.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so with that reality then, one other question before we get to break, and then we'll take some phone calls here. Listener writes asking, Rita wants to know, other than advocating for state funding, how would the organizers solve the immediate problem? There's a lot of concern, a lot of complaints, but I think people who actually have to make the hard choices would want to know what the organizers would have to do if they were in their positions. If you're on the board, if you're in the superintendent's office, do you have specific ideas about where they've got to cut here, that they're not choosing to cut?
I think I already said, you know, what my opinion is, and that's that it needs to be from the top. Again, there's a lot of administrative positions that don't actually, from my opinion, do much, and I think that they can be eliminated.
And don't we have some of the highest paid administrative positions?
Yes, yeah.
Superintendent said on this program that you don't have enough of the numbers there. The budget could not get balanced that way.
Then show us. I want transparency. Show us.
Okay.
Show us that it cannot be done. I want to see the numbers.
Okay.
Yeah.
Chris, you're nodding.
It's something that happens in our community a lot is that people have a lot of opinions about what should be happening in the city school district without understanding the full picture. And that's one of the challenges I have in trying to propose what the solution would be. I'm on the side of creative solutions. And what is it that does what the state tells our community to do, but what is the thing that the school board could do that would show that it's standing up for our community in this? And cutting students is not it. And so cutting teachers and staff at schools is not it. And so I would be more than willing to sit down and have a real conversation with people and what could our community do to solve this? And our community being Monroe County, you know, I don't know if suburban districts are operating at a surplus. Is that an option that this suburban district money could be contributed to the city school district, especially if they've got a certain amount from the state? That state money doesn't necessarily mean that it belongs to those districts. It's just been given them for their budget. Now, I don't know the legality of any of that, and that's the problem with if I suggest that, people are going to say, oh, no, you couldn't do that. You know, I don't know. And again, as
we have to be like children, then why? Why?
Right.
Why?
And that we there are creative solutions out there. And I think that's the thing that our community needs to come together to come up with creative solutions. And any sort of, okay, there's another quick answer that we could come up with is just counterproductive, because it's just going to keep people pointing at each other about who's to blame.
Since we're super late, let's take our only break of the hour. You can come back and hit that, Willa. I'm going to take some phone calls from listeners as well as we talk about proposed cuts in the positions of teaching positions, among others, in the Rochester City School District. All right, Commissioner Powell, keep it tight because we got to get to some phone calls. There's something you wanted to add there. Go ahead.
Yeah, in terms of what Christopher said about the suburban districts maybe have more money than they need, they do get state aid. There is a provision in the funding formula that called hold harmless. And about $330 million of state money goes to districts who honestly do not need it. But the state owes the education community, the whole state, $3.1 billion. So, you know, $300 million versus $3 billion, you can't balance the budget that way, right? The state's budget that way. Kind of what Stevie said about fat in the administrative portion. I used to advocate for the elimination of assistant principals in our very small schools, and the pushback I got was incredible. If you think about that being the place where potentially there's fat in the schools, individual schools, the pushback was huge, and the principals basically said we couldn't do our jobs without the APs, the different safety and security issues that they have to supervise, and that sort of thing. So over the years, I've had to accept that there really isn't any fat at the top. There isn't any fat anywhere in this system. That's what I have seen over my 20 years. If there was, you know, I'll tell you where is a lot of money is going to is our capital projects. We have this whole facilities modernization program. We have hundreds of millions of dollars invested in it. And so a lot of our resources are tied up in debt service, paying back the original borrowed money plus the interest. The state does reimburse 98% of that, a huge portion. But so our budget is inflated, not only on the expense side, or the revenue side, but the expense side. Nobody's been talking about stopping the whole facilities modernization plan. The city sees that as an economic driver, because you've got construction workers put to work and so on. So I guess that's all I can say on that. But the city, I want to go back to Mercedes' point about the city has not increased its aid in 15 years. It's $6 million less than it was 20 years ago. The tax rate that the individual homeowner pays for their school tax is at an all-time low. The amount they pay for their municipal tax is an all-time high. And the non-homestead, that is what's the tax rate charged to commercial properties, is lower than it's ever been. So the city has been shifting the burden away from commercial enterprises towards the individual homeowner and towards the city spending and not towards the school district spending. The purchasing power of the $119 million that we get now is barely over half of what it was 16 years ago.
All right, let's rip through some listener feedback. Kara says, how can a sixth grade displaced teacher be expected to perform the same and best teaching in a preschool classroom? Those are two completely different learning spaces, instructional goals, curriculum areas. This is wrong. Are some teachers going to be displaced from, say, sixth grade to kindergarten?
No, not likely. Not likely. If a teacher is a second grade teacher, they might be displaced to a first grade classroom, but more likely to backfill another second grade teacher.
At the very least, it's a disaster to do this in the middle of the school year, isn't it? I can't imagine my being told, hey, Evan, your 7-year-old is going to get a new teacher starting in January because we screwed up the budgeting so bad for years.
Well, it's not the first time it's happened because the one year the state reduced its aid in the middle of the year. And
I hear that, and I'm with you. But this is a case of a district, you know. So
nobody would do it if they didn't have another choice.
Oh, I hear that. But Chris, from the teaching perspective, what's the challenge here?
Yeah, I mean, the teaching relies on relationships, and it's one of the things that Stevie brought up about thinking about the district as, you know, from that manufacturing sort of mindset of, well, they're just teachers and students and you can move somebody from one manufacturing line to another and they'll keep making the cans or whatever. And that's just not the way that education works at all, that this is going to have serious impacts on school communities, safety, that all teachers have been trained in their buildings on the safety procedures at those buildings. And so I have that 150 teachers are going to be laid off, and I think is it 200, around 200 are going to be displaced because of this total. And so that's going to be a significant change in personnel at a school. And so, yeah, it'll have significant impact. And I just want to come back to that phrase of, like, I can't imagine. And that was something that Terry Dade said in his video when he announced this, as I never imagined. And one of the things that we come back to in the city school district is we can imagine this because it happens over and over again. And we have to acknowledge the role of racism in all of this, that parents at suburban schools and school districts that are mostly white can't imagine these kinds of things because they don't happen there. And in the city school district, we don't have to imagine it. It happens all the time.
Take me to church.
and so I think that's also a key thing that we need to think about here is you know, that as people say, oh, the city school, you know, one thing, though, that I mean, the challenge is that people have to accept responsibility. And that's where people might be willing to help the city school district. There's nobody that's accepted responsibility for this.
I know you were making a generalized comment. I live in the city of Rochester, And I still have a hard time imagining this. Like it blows me away that here we are. But I take the point that, as Stevie said during the break, you wouldn't see this happen in the suburbs. Yeah. It's a different thing. Joe in Rochester, we got to move and keep it tight. Go ahead, Joe.
Okay, a few things. First of all, I would start by cutting school board pay to nothing, make it a volunteer board, no benefits, no more health care, no more pension. I mean, you talk about accountability. The school board was asleep at the financials. Second, what's happening now is we're losing a whole lot of good young teachers because we have seen everything is, all the layoffs are strictly being done by seniority. We have an emergency. We've got teachers on assignment. A couple years ago, Justin Murphy did a piece on some teachers with huge amounts of absenteeism. Why not get rid of those teachers, go to the state and say, we've got an emergency, no more seniority right now for this emergency. And I think that the pain will be a whole lot less. Finally, one of your panel members said a misstatement. They said when a charter school student goes back to the district, the money doesn't come back. That just is not right. The district spends probably 28 grand a kid. For every charter school kid, they send over 14 grand. If the charter school kid goes back to the district, the charter school stops getting the 14 grand. So
all right,
I just wanted to correct that mistake.
Joe, thank you. So a lot of people talk about board salaries. What's the board salary? 29, 30, something like
no,
that?
No, no, no.
Is that
20? No, it's not any higher than 25.
Okay.
But
it's 25 or so.
You take seven board members and eliminate their salaries. You could retain seven paraprofessionals.
Okay.
That's not closing a gap. That's not going to do the job.
I hear that. Now, he says if you want to declare an emergency, you may have to give New York State control, but you may get the money if you do that. What do you think?
I said earlier today, if I thought that just declaring insolvency and turning this problem over to the state would, if I thought it would work, I would do it. It would mean losing my job. That's perhaps why I'm not going to get three other votes for that.
But you're saying you hand over state control, it's not going to fix anything.
All you have to do is look at Roosevelt. They still have the same problems. Mm-hmm. If you have structural gap issues of a no tax base to work with and no aid from the state, Roosevelt is still being run by the state, and they are still not able to get out from under their problems.
And people already have very little power when it comes to, like, parents, community members, as far as, like, a say in their child's education. Mm-hmm. And so if we take a board away, then that leaves us with nothing. That's not democracy. That's BS.
Now, the city of Rochester's contribution was invoked, $119 million. Is it true that Buffalo, Syracuse contribute significantly less than the city of Rochester does to their districts?
It used to be true as a percentage of the Buffalo city budget. That's not true anymore. When you take into account the sales tax sharing and STAR and roll that all in as a percentage of the municipal budget, that's just not true anymore. It used to be true. Before Buffalo went into its own receivership issues.
Okay, what about Syracuse?
I don't know about Syracuse is another animal. It's not really comparable to us. For starters, they're a whole lot whiter than we are. But I don't have the numbers for you. And by the way, folks generally have not compared us to Syracuse. The argument has always been
Buffalo. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. When's the next board meeting? And when do you vote on this?
Well, the vote is December 19th. The board meets as one of our regular committee meetings tonight. If speakers wanted to speak to us, they had to have signed up before noon today.
I think you're going to have some speakers.
Well, certainly they have the opportunity to speak to us.
Yeah.
They can sign up until noon on the 19th. But today, the cutoff has already, for today's meeting, has already expired.
Citizen Action's going to Albany? Is that right?
Yes, we are.
What's the plan? Because we're wrapping up here. What's the plan for the rest of the week here?
for the rest of the week, we're going to continue to mobilize and get people signed up to come with us to Albany. We're going to keep planning, and we're just going to strategize. That's what we do best.
Do you expect this to pass, Commissioner Powell, the budget as proposed? Or at least this plan, I should say.
Some,
it's not a budget.
Some variation of the cuts that the superintendent proposed will go through. Some variation.
Okay. A lot to happen in the next 9 days or so, and we try to keep you up to speed. Commissioner Powell, I'm glad at least you're here. Thanks
Thank
for being
you.
Here. Thank
this
you very
is,
much.
Well, this is my home turf here, right?
We appreciate it. Stevie Vargas and Mercedes Phelan from Citizen Action of New York. Thanks to both of you. Chris Widmeyer, former Rochester City School District teacher. Thank you very much for being
Thank
here.
Thank you.
Thanks to David Griffin, volunteering today. Megan Mack is the producer. Rob Braden is the engineer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a nice afternoon. Talk to you tomorrow.